Just make sure it's going round, because I'm having terrible moments when it hasn't been going round. That's fine, that's all right.
obviously, many mothers and daughters don't have easy relationships, and we certainly didn't. I sort of searched my heart when I was writing that biography for you as to whether there was anything that I could have done about it, but I really felt that that I couldn't. It was just one of those things, so that it was no good, no point in having regrets about, missed opportunities or anything like that. This is one reason why I would like you to see Dorothy Adams, because she really, in a sense, brought me up and gave me what mothering I did have. And she was extremely fond of us both. She was extremely fond of Donald, though under no delusions about the problems of bringing him up.
Yeah.
And I think that she is a very intelligent woman, and I think she could probably give you a very discerning view.
Yes, I would obviously go and see her.
A very discerning view of the family relationships. Probably much better than I can myself.
How does your mother cope with the problem of being a public figure and being a mother? I mean, did you feel there was ever a conflict between those two roles?
Yes, I did, I suppose, in a way, because, I mean, this may have just been a sort of neurosis of my own, but I felt that she had no interest in me or in anything that I did.
Did you really?
And I was very close to my father, but then as I approached puberty, and about the same time as he had a row with my mother, so he rejected me, and I couldn't understand this at all. This was frightfully hurtful to me.
Dreadful, yes. I hadn't realised that. But, of course, there's one way out of that dilemma that would now exist for a woman, namely servants, isn't there? I mean,
yes.
You can both have a public career and be a good mother, or make arrangements for mothering to be done by servants.
Well,
and presumably that was the solution in your case, wasn't
she
it?
She did always have servants, but... well, I mean, there was a hiatus, I remember, for 2 years when, you know, she only had a sort of odd boy doing jobs. But she was the sort of person who always coped. I mean, you never went hungry, and the place functioned if it had to. But it was never... I mean, she had a nice home as far as funds permitted, because my parents weren't well off in the early days. But she wasn't... a domestic person. If it had to be done, it was done, but it was not something she would do if she could have somebody else to do it. And of course, she came from a background that always did have servants anyway.
Yes, yes.
I mean, we have instances here of people who, for the first time, have no servants and they practically can't boil an egg.
Mm.
Well, Mother had no interest in it, but she'd make jolly sure that she boiled the egg.
Yes, yes, yes. I seem to remember Donald saying that she had one or two dishes that she could do, she could cook personally, but, I mean, on the whole, she didn't go in for cooking much.
She wasn't the least interested in it, but you never went hungry.
Mm.
Yes, I mean, she made beautiful drop scones, you know, the Scotch girdle things, that she would always produce if people came and, you know... freshly cooked with butter and so on. They were, you know, gorgeous. And she made some very nice sort of homemade mayonnaise stuff. Well, that made a salad absolutely super.
Mm. It's just the odd, rather elegant, feminine thing she can do, but not a systematic sort
she
of...
She had no interest in sort of domesticity as such.
Mm.
But I'm not quite sure how much that was partly... her background and her and the class from which she came.
Yes, absolutely. It's nothing to do with her feminism, particularly. It's just
Exactly. Mm. I mean, I think that one has to take it in the context of the age in which she lived and was brought up.
Yes, I quite agree. Yes, I'm sure that's right. But when you say she didn't seem to have any interest, was this simply she didn't personally bath you, supervise your clothes, sew on labels, and the sort of things that mothers do now? Is it that? that you're referring to, or is it that she wasn't interested, for instance, in your careers or your school progress or things like that?
She was interested in our careers in that, for example, I remember when Donald decided to do medicine, she immediately wrote, I mean about 15 or so, she immediately wrote round to all the colleges and got all the information and so on.
Mm.
And in a way she almost pressurized us in that we had to be good at French, we had to do this, you know, for example, and she sent us abroad. And the result was, of course, we both blocked and we both failed French, which was then obligatory in school SAT, and both had to sit it again. And once having taken it, crawled through it, I was really then quite good at French.
Mm.
But the sort of thing I'm meaning is, I would say, come back and be absolutely full of perhaps having played in a match at school or something. And all Mother could talk about was what she'd been doing at the magistrate's court that day. And I couldn't get a word in edgeways. Mm. And I used to go, blast you,
No, I quite understand. But she did actually feel free then to talk to you as children about what she did then.
Certainly. I can remember being taken to the court when I wasn't frightfully old. I suppose she thought it was part of my education. I don't think I'd evinced any interest in social work at that stage. Being taken to court, I remember it was a rather gory case and somebody next door remarking it wasn't a suitable case for a child to be there. But she did take me about to all sorts of things.
Did you?
So that I did have an unusually wide general knowledge. And when I was about 15, I remember winning my school general knowledge paper, you know, by sort of gallops.
But, see, a lot of children or people active in the women's movement have said to me that it was the various disadvantages, sometimes of the sort that you mentioned, of being the daughter or child of a distinguished woman like this, but one of the payoffs was that there were always interesting people in the house. There were always interesting things going on.
Certainly.
And you absorbed a lot simply through indirectly in that way.
This is true. This was a great compensation. You know, one got taken about, and for example, I think it was 1929, she went to an international congress in Berlin and she met Franz Hacker, and we exchanged several times after that, and similarly we got sent to France, and I mean money was short, and the only way she could do it would be a very happy way of doing it. And the world was also in the house, and I think this does contribute tremendously to one's breadth in other ways, but
yes.
Perhaps it doesn't compensate for a certain emotional loss, which might have been there anyway, whether or not she'd been a professional woman.
Yes, that's interesting. Can I just make sure, as a child, you had really quite a good education, but in a sense, quite separately from, only incidentally to your mother's intentions.
I would think
in
yes.
A day-to-day sense.
Yes, we weren't, Donald may have told you, we weren't sent to school until we were 7, partly because Mother didn't think it was, we were in a fairly remote area, but also she felt that there was no point sending a child to school until they were 7, and it did mean I was a bit backward and slow in catching up, but I did do so eventually. I was one of those sort of late developers, you know.
Was she,
yes. Too, I think.
Was she unusual in other ways? I mean, individual in other ways in her attitude to bringing up children? There was the shoes, for instance.
There was the shoes, yes. And there's a nice story, which I think I must tell you. There was a... I said in when I wrote to you that there were no... She didn't encourage hangers-on. Well, that wasn't quite true in retrospect. There was this awful woman, Kate Evans, who was a hanger-on. She came from a very poor Glasgow background, and there was almost a sort of rivalry situation for Mother between her and I, which was quite ridiculous.
Mm.
And... there's a nice story about the shoes. She came from a very poor background, so, you know, first out
your mother,
of our...
Did you mean?
No, Kate Evans did. She was involved with Madame Clara Novello Davis and Ivor Novello. She was rather on that sort of side. Anyway, She had a story, this Kate Evans, that first out of our house was best dressed, you know. So the fact of our going out without shoes worried Mother terribly. Worried Kate Evans, terribly.
Mm.
And so Mother said, well, now, Kate, if it worries you that much, I'll string them round their necks just to show that I can afford them.
Did she have a sense of humour, your mother? I mean, would you say? And that sounds in a way as if she did, but
well, by and large, I would have said that she was rather lacking in a sense of humour. But she did. She did just obviously have it in some ways.
Mm. Mm.
My father had much, much more of a sense of humour. He was a rather dry wit in his way.
Can you tell me a bit about him? I mean, obviously, you see, again, you may not want to talk about this, but one of the things that is interesting in the abstract, anyway, is what sort of marriage relationship a feminist at that time develops. I mean, is she, in fact, does she insist on being a feminist in the family household sort of thing? Is there a new attitude to relationship between the partners and so on? Was it an unusual marriage in that sense, do you think, because she was a feminist, or is that asking too much?
I would have thought that my father was an unusually kindly and liberal man, and that any marriage that he would have made would have been a partnership anyway.
Yes.
That presumably he chose her or she chose him because they had similar attitudes.
Mm. I think it was Mrs. Huno who told me, but I can't quite remember, that your mother used to boast of the fact that shortly after they got married, your father was in the habit of putting his feet up on the mantelpiece, I think, when he got in the evenings. And your mother immediately insisted on doing that too.
That's delightful, and I've never heard that. How horrible. I've never seen Father put his feet up on the mantelpiece, I might remark.
But, you know, the insistence on a more equal relationship between the two is something that, of course, the Pedic Lawrences developed.
Yes.
You know, their achievement is partly the achievement of a marriage.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Of a new kind. But you think that insofar as your mother achieved that, it was because your father was a rather unusual personality.
Yes,
rather
he
than
was
that
an
she...
unusual personality.
Mm. Mm. How did they meet, actually? And perhaps I could ask you that question as I asked you last night.
Yes. Well, now, I think that the first thing that Father heard about Mother, which I think I mentioned in that paper, was that he heard that a woman could be heard from one... a woman was speaking at a meeting who could be heard from one end of Newbury to the other. But Father had eight sisters who were perhaps just at the right age, you know, to be go-ahead and interested in any new movement. So they went along to help. This was, of course, Mother with a horse-drawn caravan to help at meetings. And they all had names like, Clarice, Doris, Florence, Ethel, and so on. And I suppose Father went along to help too, and his name was Sydney. And I think he wrote a letter afterwards saying so much he, you know, admired what they were doing and so on. And Mother replied, thinking that it was one of these multitude of girls, and she put Love Anna, and she was quite taken aback when she found that it was Mr. Sidney Ashman that she'd written. So anyway, that was how they met.
Yes, I see. So she's one of the examples. There are several suffragettes who actually are, in a sense, courted on the platform. So
yes, she was, I would think, yes. Mm. Yes.
What did he admire in your mother, do you think? Just her spirit, her vigour?
Well, now, he was a member of the Labour Party. He had been, he was a conscientious objector in the First War, and although, as I said, of no... he did leave school at 12, but he had done all this night work with this inspired, you know, village teacher. And he was a very intelligent man, although from quite a humble
background, but they're all a very interesting family. They're, you know, this nonconformist stock that has such roots and attributes.
Yes.
Sorry, what were we saying?
We were talking about what he admired in your
what
mother.
What he admired in her.
Of course, they've got nonconformity in common, haven't they, as well?
I mean, yes, except I wouldn't, although, despite mother's background, I would not describe her in a religious sense as a nonconformist. She was much more loving the music and, you know, the high church thing, anyway, towards the end of her life. But she was a nonconformist in not wishing to conform, or being a rebel, if you like.
Yes.
Yes, certainly.
Yes. Did religion actually matter for her, do you think, very much?
It's a hard question. She didn't attend a place of worship, really, whilst I knew her, just very occasionally. Perhaps we might be in Chichester and go to, I remember once going to the three-hour service on an Easter, but Friday, but that was rather exceptional. Do you know, I can't honestly tell you. But she had a most tremendous motivation that she must serve, and...
Yes.
I really wouldn't know. I think Dorothy could perhaps tell you more about that.
Yes, possibly a lot of the energies that an earlier generation would have gone into religion went into politics, in her case, or into public work.
Yes, yes.
But she doesn't talk a lot about religious matters.
Oh, no.
Because quite a lot of people in the women's movement, I think, do actually transfer into that, a lot of the...
They do. I mean, one of the Pankhursts did, for
yes,
example,
oh, certainly.
Very much.
Yes, very much so. So, did she not then see much of you as children? I mean, how much did you see of her, really?
Well, you see, when there was just Donald... As I told you, he went round with her, looked after by devoted helpers, and he was actually known as Mr. Votes. So, you know, it is Mr. Votes who has just died, though that didn't go in his obituary. I felt it should do. But when there were two of us, then, you know, we had to be left at home. I think that she did do a bit less then. But fairly soon, this sister of hers became an invalid in Italy, and she often had... at least once or twice a year, to go out there for periods. And when you were talking to Jean Huneau, she mentioned the major domo. Well, I don't think she was referring to Dorothy, who was with us until about 1928. I think she was talking about Kate Bransome, who was a single crippled woman from my father's village of Thatcham, who came to us, I would guess, in 1931-32. And was with them until the mid-60s. She adored Donald.
That's right, they're right, that's it.
She adored Donald and was very, what's the word I want, sadistic really to me.
What's
so much so that Donald aged about 14 perhaps, wrote to mother in Italy saying that he thought that she really ought to come home because of what was happening to me.
That's terrible. What about your mother's attitude to you and Donald? I mean, did she, in a way, in theory, she ought to have been at least as interested in you, if possibly even more so in you than in Donald? Did it actually work out like that? I mean, the old idea that the son is the great person, you know, in
well,
the family would presumably be out for her, wouldn't it?
Certainly, and she would insist that we had equality of opportunity. And I remember her saying to me once that she'd had to pressurize or fight father so that I got, whether it was going to the local grammar school or whatever it was, that would be true. I perhaps was a rather shy, withdrawn little girl because of all this, whereas my brother really was a rather Jekyll and Hyde character, as you may have gathered, and, you know, whine you and dine you one minute and take the coat off your back the next. And he was rather fancy free. He had a roving eye.
Because I must tell you one thing.
Gotten there.
But, so really, you're saying it's a matter of personality if Donald gets more attention.
Are you switched on?
Yes, I am.
Oh, you're still switched on. That's fine. Yes. He also had... Dorothy, actually, Adams was recalling that, you know, he had this propensity to tell lies. And this mother felt was a very serious matter. And as a mother, she felt that she had a duty to try, well, not quite beat it out of him, but to, you know, that this was a very serious character defect. And so I think that she did feel that a lot of work had to be done trying to help Donald to grow up. I think that overtly I presented far less problems, so that I don't think that she favoured one or the other. I had no impression of it at all.
Mm. Yes, that answers the question for you. Did she actually have ambitions for you, would you say? I mean, as either career-wise or in any other way. I mean, did you feel that things were expected of you, so to speak?
Well, of course, in a way, one felt a bit of a stupid nincompoop and unattractive, and that one could never compete. And anyway, as a sort of smallish child, it had a rather inhibiting effect.
Mm.
And it was very hard to break away and to build up one's own life afterwards.
Mm. Yes, because you see, another thing that quite often happens is these women are so remarkable in personality that their children, as you say, can't begin to compete.
No.
And so you either knuckle under, put it crudely, and you just are Mrs. Monroe Ashmore's little girl, whatever it is, or I think of another suffragette etch at the moment, Mrs. Billington Gregg's little
daughter. Oh, that's terrible.
Little
it was
daughter.
The cynicism there.
Yes. Or you have a fight, don't you? And you establish your independence by breaking away rather forcibly. I mean, it's a very, very difficult situation, isn't it, really? Because
yes.
You presumably admire your mother, but on the other hand, you have to have your own life.
I think my breaking away really came very late. It was really in the sort of late 20s, partly from the work point of view and partly because I felt it was my only solution. I went away, I continued my work and everything, and they knew nothing of it. I went and had an analysis.
Did you? Mm. Yes.
And from then on, I mean, it was tough work, but I think for me that was the right solution.
Mm.
Otherwise, I don't think I would have married. I think I would have been looking backwards all the time, and not looking forward and really building and grasping life, which I think I do now.
Mm.
And also, one, I think, if one's lucky, having done that, one attains an incredible inner serenity.
Yes. Because you've had battles pretty early on in life, in
yes,
a way. To,
Yes. So that, I mean, was my solution.
Did it lead you to react against your mother's feminist views at all?
No, but just before or early on in my treatment, I remember feeling absolutely flaming mad with her. I mean, obviously she wasn't responsible entirely for me, but I did. And perhaps this was a very good thing, you see, because never before in my life that I've been able to think of this anger. And I remember going for a walk down to Padworth Mill, and I think there was a sort of flaming sunset or something, and this flaming sunset just matched my mood of anger, you know. I shall always remember that night. But I think this was the beginning of my growing up, because it was coming out.
Mm.
But I don't think I hardly ever had a row with her.
Mm.
And you know, after I emotionally grew up, I mean, I just jollied along with her, but I lived my own life.
Yes. She didn't then envisage you as becoming a woman doctor or anything like that? I mean, she didn't have a career lined up for you? Or...
No, it was entirely what I wanted to do. She would give her utmost support within the means of the family finance to see that I did it.
Mm.
And incidentally, just an aside, it's interesting that the reason that Richard's mother, who came from a very different background where women didn't have careers, she had had a career herself, she was quite unusual in a sort of Irish county family. And the reason that she welcomed me so, one reason as her daughter-in-law, was because I had a career, which was rather nice.
What about dress? Your mother's attitude to dress and her general appearance?
She was very... she was a pretty woman. And in a way, perhaps, she'd got slightly stuck on, as I say, a sort of war, you know, pre-war things. She had rather sort of flowing silks and things, always beautiful quality, and I think various little legacies fell in from time to time from her family that, you know, paid for that. I can also remember that she tried to force her ideas of dress onto me, and this caused conflict between us. I can remember in Paris she bought me a beautiful silk crepe sort of mustard dress with a tiny little tartan belt, which was absolutely exquisite. I think she got it in a sale or something. She was very clever at that sort of thing. But for a shy child as I was, just beginning to form, it had no sort of flounces or anything across the chest, and I could hardly bear to wear this dress. I almost felt naked in it, and we had awful rows over things like that, you know. And about that, she seemed quite insensitive.
Mm.
Just, I mean, she didn't prepare me for womanhood, for example. It sort of happened, and then she told me afterwards. But she told me in such a way that I felt it was almost something not nice.
This
again could have been a reflection of her... of her in her day and age, rather than she as a
of course,
as a suffragette, because I think people were far more reticent in about that sort of thing.
On the other hand, you'd think she, as a feminist, would be so aware of the problem that's presented to women by not knowing.
Exactly.
Was she actually a Puritan, would you say? I mean, was she? Did she? Punish herself a lot? Did she have guilt feelings a lot? Did she deny herself a lot?
No, I wouldn't have thought so at all. I thought she was very free from such things. She liked nice things. Thoroughly enjoyed them.
She had no feeling of guilt at spending a lot of money on clothing or on spending time buying clothes or anything.
Well,
like
now,
that.
I don't think that she spent, by ordinary standards, a lot of money. I think she was very clever. I think she would go to a sale and find something. She would have things made up. She was very clever at sort of putting various bits of clothing together so that she looked nice, you know? I wouldn't suggest at all that she was extravagant.
No. Would you say she was actually thrifty, or economical? Really, considering her means, because she was, I mean, the income was quite good, really, wasn't it, for the family as a whole?
Ah, it was in later years, but it wasn't in the beginning. I mean, I don't know what my brothers told you about that, but from about wartime onwards, yes, there was plenty of money, but before that, there wasn't. I think for years, in the 20s and 30s, all she had was about £5 a week from father, and I think that as the family money went up, father did not increase what he gave her, and I think that they rowed about money. I think it was a great sore, and how far this was a sort of perhaps a sexual problem or not, I don't know. I'm not in a position to know, but I think that it was money that that possibly caused that frightful row I told you about in the late 20s. I don't think my brother was in the house when that happened, incidentally, so he may not have told you about
I don't think he did. I don't think he knew about it. Well, at least he didn't say anything about it.
No, I don't think he knew about it. And they did rather grow apart, though they always behaved with great courtesy to each other, but they just followed their own particular interests. Mm. I was quite determined that that wasn't my idea of marriage. And although I knew, I liked the country, although I knew nothing about birds, I thought, well, if Richard's interested in birds, okay, I'll be interested in birds, and I've got the sort of mind, I can mug them up, you know.
Yes.
So, as I say, I didn't want that sort of marriage for me.
What were your father's interests, what sort of gardening and
well,
sport?
You see, he built up this business, which took a great deal of time. In early years, he was very interested in amateur dramatics. He was quite good. He had a nice voice. Yes, he did gardening in the early days when we couldn't afford a gardener. And he was a very good cricketer and footballer and so on. And after the war, he persuaded Thatcham, because he felt things were so deprived in his youth, to have as their war memorial a playing field.
Oh, that's a splendid idea.
And he organised this.
Mm. Whereas your mother's interest drifted more into feminist activity, magistrates' work, and public work.
Yes, yes.
So they really come to an arrangement where each has their own separate spheres and they coincide for a limited
area. That's right.
Yes. Whereas you feel earlier on in their marriage it was rather more than that.
I feel that they were deeply in love.
Hmm.
You know, I mean, I think it was a very warm, devoted relationship. I have one or two of... I kept one letter that I found.
Mm.
You know, I mean, it was obviously a very warm relationship. But after all, I mean, many marriages grow... develop.
Yes.
You know, after 10 or 15 years, let's face it.
Yes. But, really, then... your father doesn't interest himself. Well, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but
have your questions open-ended.
Yes. Does he interest himself in her feminist activities or public life at all? What's his attitude to that?
I think on the surface he might appear a little poking fun or cynical, but I think deep down he was very, very proud of her. Though he was under no delusions about her shortcomings, shall we say.
No,
naturally.
No. But he didn't himself participate in
those
things at all.
No. Another thing, I don't know if Donald told you, but it's perhaps of interest, and that is that they did come from very different social backgrounds, and father perhaps was a little ill at ease in... I'm not suggesting he yet with his knife didn't. He was, nature's gentleman itself. But there was no sort of social life in our household. Obviously, we didn't have cocktail parties with mother's background, but we did very little entertaining apart from family, or if, say, somebody was coming to speak or something like that. And as I grew up, I found that socially this meant that I felt a little insecure. In fact, even now, if I have to introduce X to Y, I just go quite blank half the time. I can't remember when I should introduce X to Y or Y to X, you know.
Yeah.
But it does, I think, stem back to that.
Mm. Mm. Yes. So really, your father was marrying up, was he then?
Very much so, yes.
I see, yes.
Yes,
I hadn't realised that. Yes. But I have the feeling with your mother that she was a very strong family person in the sense that she felt strong obligations to her relatives. And, you know, that was an important aspect of her life.
I'm sure it was. I would agree with that. Absolutely.
I mean, you mentioned her sister, but... She also had her father in the house, didn't she, at the end of his life?
Yes, she did. He was a magnificent old man. I've spoken about him pretty fully, which I needn't, repeat in that thing. But what happened was that during the bombing in the war, the police found him wandering in Plymouth with, I think, £200 in his pocket, which was quite a lot of money in those days. And so she had him to live in the house, and the old nursery was converted into a bedsitter for him. He was a bit potty by then, I mean, in that he was very old and a bit eccentric, and he regarded us all as Sassenachs, and eventually, you know, that we were going to poison him, and so on, didn't like father. And he was very busy with his books all day, and I can remember him getting rather distressed because he wasn't able, I think, to learn Spanish in perhaps a week or something, which he felt he ought to have been able to do, you know. But eventually he got senile, I think is the kindest word, that he had to go into a home at Abingdon, and that's where he died. But you must remember that mother's mother had died when she was quite a small girl of appendix, because there was, you know, it was in the early days of appendicectomies, and I think that had rather shattered him, and that she and her sister had largely been brought up by their grandmother and aunt, and I think that for very many years he hadn't had very much to do with her. I think he went to live in the south of France for a long time.
Did she have a... do you have the feeling that she had a happy childhood, your mother?
Yes, I would have thought so. I wish I could remember all the sort of, you know, chatty... She used to talk to me about it. Yes, I would think she did, in a very warm and happy family relationships. And some of her aunts, I can think of Jacob Primer's wife, who had been Jessie Monroe, her father's sister, I can remember, and Aunt Agnes, who was the widow of a man called Milne, and various others, I think, had a very warm relationship with her. And I think none of them were in any way of condemning her going off alone and suffragetting and all the rest. You know, if this was what she wanted to do, they would help and support her in any way that they could. But I think she'd rather been out of touch with her father for some time, perhaps until perhaps about 1932, when he gave her money to buy her first car. And she went through all the ads, you know, second-hand car ads. Our house was littered with them. And eventually she brought a small BSA, because of course it had pre-selected gear. And then, you know, there's the story of her learning to drive, which I
yes,
I told
and
you
Donald
about.
Told me that. And you used to see, he said, you used to see this little figure behind the wheel, two little eyes looking above the steering wheel.
Yes, father, of course, she'd been rather, she used to love horses in her early days, and I think she'd loved driving. And father used to say, firstly, that if she met somebody, she used to sort of bow to people, and the car would almost curtsy. And also, that if she was, you know, wanting to get by something, she'd sort of sit forward as if she was a thing. But I'm not saying she wasn't a good driver. I think, considering that she took to driving late in life, she was a damn good driver.
Mm. And of course, it was unusual for women to drive at all in those days, wasn't
well,
it?
Well, 1930, unusual. Yes, perhaps. But I also think she had the common sense to give up when she had a Daimler by then, which was rather heavy, in, say, about when she was in her late 70s, or mid-70s, and the traffic was very heavy on the Bath Road. She had the sense to give up or have a driver.
Can you tell me at all about her attitude to getting older? Did she dislike getting older?
Yes, I would think she did. And she could not accept her deafness. Many people can't accept deafness. She couldn't. And we, at least me, found it very hard to cope with her being deaf.
She pretend that she
yes,
could understand
yes,
and
yes,
couldn't.
Yes, it was, you know, very irritating, and perhaps one wasn't as patient. You know, one is sympathetic with blind people, but the general run is that deaf people get short sympathy.
That's quite true, yes, because there's nothing obviously wrong with
no,
them.
No, no. Mm. No, I think in a way she did resent it. Personally, I find that each era of my life gets more and more interesting and rewarding.
I rather find that. I suppose there is a limit, isn't there?
But yes. I find that.
But you feel she was always wanting to do things, was
yes.
she? And it was just frustrating not to be able to...
Yes.
But that also presumably is accompanied by a determination to battle against old age, which is rather admirable, isn't it?
Certainly. Mm. I also think that she, as I said before, has little interest in medical things, and I think that she often should have had medical advice, and she was a very difficult and awkward patient.
Was she?
And I think that she'd obviously had this heart condition, and she should have had help with it, but she wouldn't go near the doctor. She broke her leg some years before, Donald may have told you. Donald actually looked after her, and his first remark when she dreadful, yes, she fell down one of the storeroom steps at the back of the house, and as she came back, she'd broken her leg, she gave an absolutely filthy look, and of course I hadn't laid the table as she wanted it laid, and so, you know, it was my fault. But anyway, when Donald examined her, his first remark was, what always tickled her, was, good gracious, Mother, you've got clean feet. And she expressed surprise at this remark. He said, Mother, you have no idea what I go to see. But there again, she would only have physiotherapy help for the absolute limit.
Would she really? Why was that, actually?
Do you know, I don't really know. I think it was a very stupid offer and short-sighted offer. Mm.
Quite a lot of people do, reforming people and non-conformist circles do have this attitude to doctors. They feel that you should only be cured by natural means.
That's right. Well, linking on to that, I don't think I was a very strong child. And at one stage, I think she had me on a vegetarian diet under some man in Edinburgh.
She wasn't herself a vegetarian,
no,
was she?
No, no.
But she had individual ideas about health.
Yes. She could also be very stubborn because, as I say, I wasn't very strong. And I did have these sort of tummy upsets. And she used to dose me. I think it was that red stuff. I think it was Parrish's food. Is it Parrish's food?
Oh, yes, I remember that.
And it gave me the most terrible colic. And I was frightfully, I really was in desperate pain. And I would tell her this, and she'd think I was just being stupid. And years later, I happened to mention this to a hospital sister I was working with, and she said, of course it would give you pain, because you couldn't tolerate the morphia or morphine in it.
Mm.
But I couldn't get that over to Mother.
Was that linked to a sort of general stoicism about illnesses and things in your mother? And did she, was it the norm not to complain about things?
Yes, if you didn't want to go to school, for example, you were told to get up and dress and have breakfast and then see how you felt then. And half the time you then went to school.
Yes, I mean, one thing that interests me, you see, about a lot of these women is that they combine their public activity with really quite a degree of self-discipline in their personal lives and not spending as much as they could spend on themselves and generally... being pretty demanding of themselves, you see, and presumably also demanding of their children.
Yes, yes. Mother had all sorts of books, you know, about sex and, you know, Mary Stopes and bringing up children and all that sort of thing. But I can remember the most awful fights with her when I was perhaps 2, 3, 4... and still sitting on the potty in the middle of the carpet when my father would be coming home at about 10 o'clock at night. Well, she should have called it a day. Not attack me in this way with soap enemas and so on. I bitterly resented this. So you see, she wasn't all that modern.
Yeah.
In some ways. I mean,
what was her attitude actually to the careers you later adopted? I mean, when was she interested in your career?
Oh, I think so, definitely.
Mm.
Though she once said something to me which I found frightfully hurtful. I didn't pursue it with her. She said, yes, I think hospital almoning, as it was then called, yes, I think that would be suitable f- for you because it's a lot of brief contacts. I felt that inferred that I wasn't able to make long-term contacts, whereas I consider I don't make superficial contacts easily, but what I do is make deep relationships very well. And you see, that casts a doubt on you then as to, you know, really what sort of person you are.
Yes.
So I really wonder how much he really knew me.
It was probably meant kindly, wasn't it? It was just
it
that...
It probably was. I probably twisted it round the wrong way.
And you're saying, you know, you're good at that,
yes,
rather than you're bad at the other.
Yes,
yes. 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 Was she actually then, do you think, in bringing both of you up, rather tactless, do you think, then? I mean, uncomprehending.
Well, I can.
Insensitive.
Well, I felt she was, but then maybe I'm not a fair judge.
Mm.
I can remember having terrible nightmares when I was a child. There was an awful man under the bed who used to be grasping my leg, you know.
Mm.
And I used to go into them, and I really got short shift from her. Now, that, I think, is a time when a child needs mothering.
Oh, yeah, terrible.
But, as I say, Dorothy could, you know, I think give you a much, much shrewder assessment of that period of our lives.
Yes. What about discipline, actually, Mrs. Ridgway? Was she a disciplinarian, really?
Yes.
Was she strict?
Yes, she was, and, as I said, I knew to an inch how far I could go, you know, being dumb saucy. But on the whole, it wasn't me who needed to be disciplined because, as I say, I was a too obsequious child, perhaps. It was my brother who needed to be disciplined.
But she didn't have any inhibitions about hitting you, or if necessary, or...
I don't remember her ever hitting us.
Punishment.
Hitting me.
I mean...
No, her... What's the word I want? Her sort of mental attitude, you know, just sort of flayed one, at least it flayed me to bits if I, you know, ran into her disfavour. But it was far more physical with my brother because there's a delightful sequence which he may have told you about when he'd been particularly naughty. And I think Father had a hand in this. And for some reason, we had two stairs in the house and Father started chasing him. Or, you know, Don wouldn't come. Father went after him. And this went on for a bit. And the moment occurred when Donald caught up with Father and Father looked over his shoulder. Donald was just behind him and it was sort of that chasing vice versa.
It sounds as if your father was, in a sense, a much better father than she was a mother, in a way.
Well, he was out an awful lot. And, as I say, I was his darling daughter until I was about 11, as I say, in puberty. And then it appeared to me, though this may not be correct, that he almost rejected me overnight. And this I found utterly unbearable.
Sounds terrible.
I just to this day don't really understand it.
Mm.
And from then on, he adopted a sort of slightly cynical defensive attitude, you know, and he'd misinterpret things that you said. Now, I was absolutely devoted to my father, and I think that in a way perhaps I'm rather like him. You know, I administer, I'm very good at organising, and I think I perhaps have the same sort of sense of humour as he has. I didn't find it easy, though, to have been there and help him when he was dying because he was terribly demanding. Because he was dying of cancer and he didn't know it overtly and he was very frightened. He wouldn't make his will for years and I think this was a fear of death. But, yes, I think I felt much closer to my father, even with his rejection, really, than I ever did to mother.
How were they together, actually? You say he was always very polite to her. Did they joke with each other at all? I mean...
Well, on the whole, I would feel, from when I reached a conscious level, that, in a way, his gorgeous dry sense of humour was wasted on Mother. Now, whether she had ever enjoyed it, or whether it was part of the act not to appreciate it, I'm not in a position to tell.
But you feel, in a way, he establishes his personality against or independently from her rather strong personality through humour, does he really?
I mean, perhaps. Perhaps. Mm. You see, he was equally a strong personality in his own right.
Mm. Mm.
I mean, he was no doormat.
Yes, one thing that rather surprises me is that, in fact, your mother was content to be in the situation where she received housekeeping money, so to speak, at his discretion.
It was bitter for her, and as I say, he was building up a business, which he did very successfully, and he didn't increase her money, and this was a constant, this money thing was, I think, the thing that poisoned their relationships, and as I say, how deep this had a significance,
yes,
I can't judge.
Mm. Mm.
But she was bailed out, if that's the right word, by various relations dying and leaving her little legacies, and then her father, she got his money, and then when her sister died eventually, that money came to mother.
Mm.
It wasn't a lot, but I mean, she promptly spent it and enjoyed it.
Mm. But there's never the feeling that she wants to establish her independence by actually having a career of her own, then. I mean, that's just not on for a woman at that social level, I suppose, at that time, is it?
Well, she had no training.
Mm.
I mean, she could have gone away and been a professional organiser, but, I mean, she was committed to us as her family. She was committed to her marriage.
Mm. And it's either that or a career at
yes.
that time, whereas now one can, however awkwardly, combine the two
exactly,
as a woman.
Exactly, exactly.
Mm.
Mm. And I mean, she was a paid organiser at one time for the suffragettes, when she was the organiser for Scotland, for example.
Yes.
I don't know how much of that was paid. But all her subsequent work was in an entirely voluntary capacity.
Mm. Actually, you say you take after your father in your organising abilities, but didn't you get the impression she was a good organiser as well? I mean, the way she organised the house, made sure you always had food and this sort of thing. I mean, wasn't she good?
I'm not saying that she was bad. But I'm rather thinking of two different sorts of people.
We haven't actually discussed yet. Was your mother a busy person? Was she always active doing things? Did you feel that time was short?
Well, that's an interesting question, because she didn't have the same time scale as people did, ordinary people did. I've mentioned in that those notes I gave you that she would, work frightfully hard at a campaign, and then she might fall into bed for several days and just sleep and renew herself. She didn't have the need, as I have the need, to be fed every 3 or 4 hours. She could go for hours without food. And fortunately, she did recognise that I was like her sister and had to be fed at regular intervals. This is when we were travelling or something like that. She would, I think, do much of her good work writing and preparing and thinking and so on late in the night. She'd be playing cards. Oi! So sorry, that was the dog escaping. She'd, sit up writing or playing patience or something way into the night.
Would she really? Because I think Donald said she just didn't need sleep. Cool. I mean, in certain circumstances, she would read a lot late at night.
Yes. I'm a person who likes, 8-10 hours of sleep a day. But I think in the ordinary way she could do with much less. But you see, on the other hand, having help, she didn't have to get up at 8 o'clock in the morning normally. She could lie in if she wanted to. No, I think she was what I call a night functioner. There are some people who do function that
And she
way
had
around.
A sort of private life, in a way, after
yes.
you'd all gone to bed,
yes.
in a sense.
Yes.
Yes. Because she had notebooks, didn't she, quite a lot, with little poems and bits of literature and things like that.
Yes, yes.
So that one feels she did study, in a way, all through her life for her speeches and just because she wanted to educate herself.
She was a great reader. And she loved poetry, she loved words. You know, I think that she really had a very deep appreciation of literature.
Did she try to convey that to you as children?
Well, insofar, yes, that we were encouraged to read and that there were always good books around us. I can imagine that if Donald, for example, had come stuffing home with comics, it would have caused her, you know, sadness. I don't think she'd necessarily have confiscated them, but she would have tried to direct his interests into more worthwhile
But she didn't. Things. You didn't have her poetry readings or anything like that?
No. All I do remember, which Donald may have told you, is that she used to coach. He was rather good at amateur dramatics, and it was largely because Mother took him in hand, and I remember they used to perform in the dining room in the evening. She taught him how to project his voice and how to walk and how to sit down as a woman and so on, and she used to really go through it with him, you know, learning his part and so on.
Interesting, yes, because a lot of these women are actresses, really, I mean, in a sense, and when they're on the platform, they really are conscious of doing a performance.
Well, I think in a way, you know, you have to be, you have to project yourself. I haven't done very much public speaking, though I have done a certain amount, which I find no problem. I can, you know, project my voice easily and so on, and I understand the intoxication of talking. Speaking. There is an intoxication about it.
But there's also a sheer skill, isn't there?
Certainly. Lovely. It's got through.
in projecting your voice. I mean, a lot of these suffragettes are contemptuous of the microphone, for instance. They wouldn't be seen dead speaking to the microphone. They say with pride, we knew how to project our voice.
Yes, I think Mother really studied this. And I think in her day that record gives very little indication, as I said, of the timbre of her voice. I think that she really was a brilliant orator.
Do you really? You saw her in action quite a lot, did you?
Well, just vague remembrances, you know. But there again, I mean, Dorothy would have known her more in her prime. But I think, and I've heard Father say, I mean, I think that she really was very outstanding. And in her ability to hold an audience and to deal with hecklers. I think she was particularly good at that. I can remember in later life when she really wasn't able to defend herself in quite the same way, being acutely embarrassed when she was heckled at a political meeting by the local landlord at Beenham. And, you know, in a way I wanted to protect her from it. She didn't worry her one iota, but I felt that she wasn't quite able. No, I think she was quite able for him. It was just perhaps I didn't like him attacking my ma, you know.
Yes, yes. But a lot of people, or several people, said to me how very, in a sense, tactful she was in handling the meeting. She was just very good at the sort of business of being in the chair. And
she
that
was.
Sort of thing.
She was.
Does that reflect her personality generally in some way? I mean, does it relate to your memory of her? That sort of tact?
It does, insofar as my sister-in-law, that's my brother's first wife, tells the nice story of what a marvellous mother-in-law she was, and that the only time that she made any sort of suggestion or comment was when she was sitting in their house on a practically threadbare carpet, and she made some remark about there being some good carpet sales on. And it was a fat sort of joke between my sister-in-law and I that was the only time that Mother ever sort of made the slightest comment.
Yes, nicely done. Yes, yes.
And she never interfered or anything. I mean, now, on that side, she was most admirable, and she had a most happy relationship both with Kay, Donald's first wife, and with my husband Richard.
How did she... maybe she didn't know about Donald's first marriage breaking up.
She did, and I have put a note in that paper that something that she took terribly hard, it grieved her deeply.
Did it?
And I can remember the week before she died, her sort of rocking in her bed, because, you know, one just didn't accept how ill she was, almost keening to herself. And she was keening about Donald and the family. She was absolutely heartbroken over that.
For the sake of the children, partly, I suppose.
Partly for the sake of the children. Mm. Partly, she knew Donald's faults. And the whole sort of sadness of it.
Yes.
And, you see, we came from a family that, you know, just didn't have these sort of marital upsets.
Yes.
And Donald is the only one of all the cousins on father's side, because mother's side there aren't any cousins, who've had any divorce or separation.
Is that so? So it really starts with Donald, in
yes,
a way.
Yes.
But so you can't relate Donald's problems in any way to his mother particularly. I mean, there's no obvious way in it.
There was an aunt of his, a mother's only sister, who was very charming and very willful. And I'm not suggesting these things are inherited, but I think she was quite a handful in all sorts of ways. Because there was nothing in mother or in my father of the sort of problems that Donald showed.
No.
I mean, not only women, but I mean financially he'd run up the most awful bills, and father would, I mean, right to his dying day, he was paying his overdrafts, whereas I was practically biting my fingernails off, living within my income, getting no help at all. Which sometimes I felt was rather unkind.
Yes, yes.
That was life.
But getting back to the time question, so you're really saying your mother's pattern of life was more one of terrific bursts of energy combined with complete quiescence.
Yes.
Was it? And you didn't,
you know, stoking herself up again for the next effort.
Yes, you didn't feel all that she was scurrying around all the time and had no time for you. She might be terrifically busy one moment, but she might be completely accessible and available another.
Certainly, or she's probably asleep, of course, in bed.
Yes, it's a marvellous capacity to have. I wish I had that myself. Where you can actually sort of adapt your sleeping to your needs,
yes,
sort of thing.
Well, she did have that.
Way. What about time, Mrs. Ridgway? What about class? I mean, I have the impression that your mother, I mean, obviously people of that generation are much more class conscious than we are, inevitably by the reason of their generation, but that she was relatively classless
mother
for her day.
Mother was, I consider, completely classless.
So she could mix freely with anybody.
She could mix freely with anybody. Everybody would accept her, except insofar as I did tell you before that certain sort of county types felt that she had sort of betrayed her class, that she should have been on their side, you know, and were a few, you know, unkind people in that sense. But she could mix with anybody. She could make a labourer feel at ease, anybody, and she would feel it was the intrinsic value of the person in their own right. That, I think, was one of the most dominant things about her.
And she was anti-snobbish, really, if anything. I mean, disliked county entertainment.
Well, that was just a complete bore to her. I mean, quite apart from her being temperance, she just had no interest in small talk. And as I say, it did mean that we rather tended to be brought up with the sort of out the train without the sort of experience of having this sort of meeting.
Because that's the thing. I think I remember very well Fiona Billington Gregg saying to me that her mother was completely without small talk. That's her exact phrase. And that this made it very difficult for her as the wife of her husband, who was a businessman, a billiard table manufacturer or something.
Yes.
And it made it difficult. Would Was that the same with your mother, do you think? I mean, how did your mother react? How did she relate to your father's business, if at all?
She wasn't really very interested in it because she felt it wasn't giving her enough money. Father didn't really have small talk either, so that was no problem.
Hmm. But, I mean, did she feel obliged to entertain his business?
Well, no, in that day and age, there wasn't that sort of entertaining for business as there is nowadays. This is something I think that's arisen since.
Hmm. Hmm. So, really, that's another example of their separate spheres, in a way. She doesn't intrude on his sphere at all.
No.
Yes. Could you tell me a bit about Mrs. Billington Gregg while I think of it? Because it sounds to me as if you've got a very vivid memory of her. A big woman.
Yes, very dominating. And this slightly rather smaller husband, they were rather, as I say, this sort of, he was rather cynical, which, Donald, I think, remarked the other day, must have been rather difficult to cope with. But you say she went on to destroy everything that she took part in.
Well, she had rows wherever she was.
Now,
and you said she was destructive, personally, in some way. Or...
Yes, I would have... Well, I mean, as a social worker, this is what my diagnosis would be.
Mm.
But Mother had absolutely no use for the Pankhursts and for the militant movement. She felt that it was utterly wrong. You must do things by democratic means. She felt that you mustn't be autocratic. You mustn't be violent. She felt this terribly strongly. And she, I think, wherever she went, was a harmonizing influence and a radical influence. She got involved rather in things like the temperance movement and sisterhood movement and so on. But she had, I think, a broadening aspect on them, and I think everybody admired her and liked her tremendously in those movements. Mm.
So you contrast her very much with Mrs. Billington Gregg in there.
I would feel so, yes.
She's a reconciler and not a splitter.
Definitely, definitely.
Mm. Mm. Because you don't get that same pattern in her career, do you, of resigning from every movement?
She never resigned
from anything.
There's only that one resignation. She felt terribly strongly that if you didn't agree with what was going on, you stayed inside and fought for your point of view.
Hmm.
I've heard her say that.
Yes, I find that a sympathetic view. Why then didn't she go into Parliament? Because, I mean, it seemed to me an obvious thing for a speaker to do with all the training she had earlier. Why didn't she get a Labour Party seat somewhere?
I don't know. I think she would have been very, very good at it. Because, as I say, she could have spoken, but she would have also had this tremendous harmony with her grassroots.
You mean getting on with her constituents?
Yes, but you see, there weren't that number of seats, and perhaps people who hadn't opted for a family were able to go at things much more wholeheartedly as far as career went. But, you know, did any of the suffragettes get into Parliament?
Well,
don't think they did.
This is the question, you see. I mean, one of the interesting things is quite why, after this terrific effort for women's suffrage, when they got it, you never get above about 40 women MPs, and pretty well none of them with feminist connections.
No.
Eleanor Rathbone's an example of a non-militant suffrage person who's in. But
yes.
On the whole, no. Ellen Wilkinson's a suffragist who got in.
But was Ellen Wilkinson actually a suffragette?
She was a suffragist, not a suffragette.
No,
yes.
She wasn't a suffragette.
She was a non-militant. Because
I remember, merely a minor thing, but I remember being introduced to Ellen Wilkinson once. I suppose I was about 12, as Miss Monroe's daughter. And, you know, a sort of look of sort of, you know, what have we here? Just crossed her brow for a moment, and then she realised that Mother was, you know, probably using her maiden name. But I registered that. It tickled me enormously.
But you see, it is interesting it's an illustration of the way in which, for women's emancipation, you've got to have much more than the vote.
Yes,
you've got
yes.
to have to make it possible for women to stand as candidates.
Yes,
and that
yes.
means a revolution in men's attitude to their function.
Yes. I would think the main reason was, you see, Donald was born in 1915, I was born in 1920. I would really think it is that our mother felt that she had to go on. I don't know if it was ever suggested to her, but, you know, she did have commitments in that direction.
Yes, and it's the woman who has those commitments, not the man.
Exactly, and this is where equality is so difficult.
Mm. Yes, yes.
Or reaching for equality is so difficult.
Also, I'll switch off and say this, yes. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. I think I'd like to say two points to this question of why the suffragettes didn't go further. I think the first thing is that any one generation or any one collection of people and ideas can only carry something so far. That's the first thing. And the second thing is, in relation to my own analysis, I couldn't, this is one reason I had a very difficult analysis, because it was a Freudian one, and it was against all my upbringing, many of these things that were being trotted out to me, shall I say.
You mean that the Freudian psychology,
yes,
is anti-feminist?
Well, it
way.
Is really, mm. You know.
Yes, it's very interesting, yes, yes. So that the problem posed to you must have been particularly acute.
I think it was.
Now, that's most interesting, because in a sense there's a sort of built-in idea into Freud's whole theories that the woman's role is in the family, isn't there?
I would feel, you know, Kuchen and Kirchen and,
that's
and
right.
Kuchen, you know, jam,
yes,
and whatnots.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Anyway, it was rather interesting that this was one of the reasons. Because another reason is that people are so het up about class issues and foreign policy issues that you haven't got time to concern yourself with sex issues between the wars, if you see what I mean.
There are this is true.
They're overriding other issues,
yes,
like Hitler and,
yes,
unemployment,
yes,
and things like that.
Yes. But it is interesting, of course, that nothing happens till the 60s.
Mm.
Mm. I was on the committee for some years of the Women's Freedom League, and I used to set them out for them, but I felt that the feminist movement had opened the doors, and that it was for my generation to take advantage of this and to make a success of our careers and to prove that we could do these things. That, in a way, to be too feminist was a little old hat, that we'd got beyond that.
Yes, yes,
there was
an interesting argument. When your first point about a movement can only take emancipation a certain way is simply that in order to get the idea of votes for women generated, you have to be rather limited in your overall view of,
yes,
things. Is that your point? And that another generation which isn't landed with the responsibility of the campaign of the vote has to have the wider ideas.
I would think so, yes.
Yes, that's interesting. I think there's something in that. That's interesting. Did you come across Lily Lenton at all?
Yes. She was rather a hanger-on of Mother's. She was an interesting woman, as you know. She'd served in hospitals in Serbia in the First War and all this sort of thing. I always regarded her as slightly crackers. Father disliked her intensely. Mother couldn't have her to stay in the house too much. I don't think Mother was all that fond of her. I think, you know, Lillian was a wee bit at a loose end, probably.
Yes, I think she was a bit crackers too, actually.
Yes.
But that was quite a close connection, wasn't it? Because they're both active, prominent in the Women's Freedom League.
Yes, what but of course, Lillian, of course, was a militant anyway,
yes,
in the early days.
Yes, yes.
Very
she
much
simply
so.
Latches on to the Women's Freedom League rather later, I think.
Well, I think so. Mm. I think so.
Mm. What was the Women's Freedom League like when you were involved with it? When were you involved, actually, Mrs. Ridgewell?
Oh, I should think about roughly about 1945,
1943
to, well, I suppose
1955. Were you really? Because my impression is, at that time, is that it's a lot of old ladies, really, struggling to keep going in rather old paths, but realising that they aren't really getting anywhere.
Well, I wouldn't exactly say old paths. They were I think mainly concerned with legislation which was discriminatory.
Yes, yes.
There's a rather nice thing. When I got married, Mother said that they wanted to give me something, and what would I like? And I said, well, you know, would they like to give me a handbag? And they gave me actually a most lovely crocodile handbag, and I was quite taken aback. So I wrote them a letter of thanks, and I said, I was so grateful, etc., etc., and I did hope they would understand if I didn't follow too closely in Mother's footsteps, i.e. spending my honeymoon in prison.
Yes, yes, yes. She always remained a Scotswoman, didn't she?
Oh, yes, very much so.
And she felt Scots?
Definitely, yes. Mm. And Father used to twig and used to annoy her a wee bit. He used to say, oh, yes, he said, Scots like the potatoes do better when they come south.
But that would help with the classlessness, wouldn't it? Because a Scottish accent is a classless accent, really.
And also,
in England,
she didn't
it?
Have a particularly Scottish accent. There was just the slight turn of a vowel that you would recognise, or perhaps the use of a slightly unusual word.
Yes.
But I believe that from Inverness, where she came from, they do speak a most beautiful English.
Mm. But you feel it was important in her, do you, that she felt Scottish?
Oh, definitely.
Yes.
Definitely.
Yes. So that gave her a sort of distance from English institutions. Perhaps it would enable her to move more freely. I don't know.
It could be.
Hmm. That's interesting. Of course, there's a great tradition, isn't there, of Scots people doing well in England anyway.
Yes,
Making a name. What about Mrs. Despard? You said you remembered her quite vividly.
Yes. She was a marvellous old lady.
Did she take an interest in you?
Oh, certainly. Although she was this tall and almost daunting figure, yet one wasn't afraid of her as a small child.
She'd sort of pick you up, would she, or encourage you to come on her
knee? Oh, I would have thought so, yes. I can't remember as early as that.
Mm.
And I can remember her sending me a pendant thing for, as a wedding... Not as a wedding present. Must have been for something, anyway. No, no, because she was dead then, but...
Mm.
Perhaps it was when I left school or something like that. But, she was a person apart, you know?
Because your mother had...
aura about her.
Yes. She looked rather distinguished, didn't she? I mean, with that headdress.
Gosh, yes, yes. And that was what she always wore.
Your mother presumably had quite a close connection with her.
Very much so.
Mm.
Dorothy Adams told me, you see, this is the sort of thing I never knew.
Mm.
They had apparently Mrs. Despard leading some procession at some stage. Now, Dorothy was with her, so this must have been the 20s. And normally, Mrs. Despard, for some reason, usually wore sandals. Must have been perhaps wrong with her feet. And they had dressed her up in rather hard black shoes, and she was having difficulty in walking. And Dorothy said, I remember your mother's fury, absolute fury, that they should have done that to Mrs. Despard, that they should have been so unthinking, just, you know, presumably, just so that she should look nice.
Mm. Mm. Well, she always wore sandals, that was part
yes.
of her uniform.
And,
you know,
and the men sort of sneering at them.
Mm. Mm. Your mother was a dignified-looking woman, was she? I mean, a sort of fine woman, would you say, to look at?
Oh, yes. I mean, she would stand out anywhere.
Mm.
Somebody with a sort of presence.
Yes.
And she always... looked pleasant, you know, she had a smile and would always greet people. She'd always go three-quarters of the way to meet them.
Yes, that's what your brother said to me. He used the word sweet about her. He said
yes.
She was a sweet person. And other people said that she had a lot of charm about
her. She had tremendous charm.
Mm. Because that's something that's terribly difficult to pin down, isn't it? But it's frightfully important in fact.
Yes.
And you can't describe quite how it is, except, I suppose, a responsiveness to other people. An interest in other people
yes.
as individuals.
Yes, yes.
That's most interesting. I've exhausted all my long list of questions. Is there anything else you think that we ought to
I don't think
say?
So. Because, you know, the sort of hard facts that occurred to me, I'd written down for you already.
Yes, yes, absolutely. No, that was very helpful. But sometimes the trouble is one asks a lot of questions about a person one never knew oneself, which may totally miss the mark, you know. I mean, if there's any other sort of aspect of your mother which you think we ought to bring out, do say, because I don't want to limit things by my blindness, if you see what I mean.
No.
But we have ranged very widely, haven't we, really? So you feel, looking back on it all, a combination of affection and regret that you couldn't establish, the two of you, a closer relationship, because really, you admire your mother, you'd say, would you?
Certainly.
But that circumstances were such that that admiration couldn't fully show itself as you would have liked it to, nor that her natural affection and interest in you could come out adequately. It's one of those things, isn't it, in life, really?
It was the interesting thing that when I married Richard, that my relationship with his mother, who was a very forbidding and austere person to most people, I had the most warm relationship to her, and it was almost like a rebirth of something which I had missed.
That's nice. And she took to your husband very well, did she?
She always liked Richard. I mean, I had known Richard many years before I married him. And she always liked him because there's a certain eccentric romanticism and sort of bigness and niceness about Richard which immediately went to Mother's heart, you know. You know, Donald's first wife was all right. You know, she was the best of what he produced, and that wasn't saying much, do you know? But Richard, she loved Richard.
She was a romantic in a way, your mother,
wasn't she? Of course
she
was, yes. Yes.
And that fits with the poetry and the idealistic movements and the broad sweep of her interests.
Yes, yes. No, one, I mean, one accepts that situations were such that probably these situations as they existed were inevitable.
Yes.
But when one is talking like this to you, one is sorry that perhaps that things weren't different, that one could have known her better, put it that way.
Yes, I mean, one can...
Yes, several people since I've grown up have said to me, of course, you know, you never had a chance in that situation. I mean, I don't reproach anybody or anything, but it's interesting that near relatives who are very fond of me should have said that.
Hmm.
I think that's really all I wanted to say.
Yes, that's interesting. And of course, the terrible thing is that the relatives can't say that at the time. And they can't explain to you, no, don't worry about your relationship with your mother. It's an impossible situation.
Exactly.
Nobody can say that.
No. Well, of course, in a way, if they had, I think it would... Well, there were one or two, if they had, I think it would have helped enormously.
Hmm.
Still, there you are.
Hmm. Well, Donald was absolutely right. He